Welcome to our podcast, How Would You Beat? In each episode, we pick a company and talk about how you could use Jobs to Be Done innovation methods to beat that company's product. We'll discuss innovation theory and explain the methods so you can put the theory into practice at your company. I'm Jay Haynes, the founder and CEO of Thrive. That's Thrive without the vowels, THRV.com. We help product marketing and sales teams use Jobs to Be Done innovation methods to build, market, and sell great products. I'm here with my colleague, Jared Ranieri. So today, we're going to talk about Apple. How would you beat Apple? And we've talked about Apple before as it relates to Apple and Google Maps, which is a very interesting analysis. How would you beat a specific product? But today, we're going to talk about more generally as a product strategy, how would you beat a company like Apple? And just to review, Apple is almost the size of a nation. It actually is much bigger than a lot of nations. It is huge. It has a market cap of $2 trillion. In the last 12 months, it had $273 billion in revenue and $67 billion in operating income. So we really do have to think about Apple as a nation. It is that big. And Apple's been in the news recently, which is one of the reasons we thought we would talk about it today, because the famous investor Warren Buffett made $100 billion off of his investment in Apple stock, in which he first made in 2016. So it's been an incredible story. I was first an Apple customer in 1979, which seems like 100 years ago. So Apple is a dominant company, but are we seeing cracks in Apple? An interesting statistic is that the number of first-time buyers of iPhones has actually declined by 60% since 2016. So what does that mean? And if you were trying to beat Apple, how would you do it?
Yeah, it's fascinating. And part of me wonders about the iPhone statistic, how many people already have iPhones, and if that's why there are fewer first-time buyers. But I just
there are about I think it's between 900 million and a billion iPhone users. So there's another 6 billion to go.
Interesting. I bought my first iPhone, I think, like 4 months ago, because they had made a small one. That was great. but anyways, I mean, what's fascinating about Apple to me is how good they are at reinventing themselves. So, you know, we're inclined to think about the huge portion of their $273 billion in revenue that comes from hardware sales. But they also have very successfully moved into subscription services. In Q4 of 2020, they made $14 billion in subscription services, which would be an enormously successful company on its own by normal standards of any reckoning. So then we sometimes forget how good Apple is at reinventing themselves. They were a PC company, and then with the iPod, they became a portable music company. And then with iTunes, they became a music distributor. And then they got into books and started selling books. Like, every time that we go to a company and we talk to them, like how you have to create new products in order to get your customer's job done better in order to stay ahead of the competition, people always say, but what if we don't have the right to play there? And I always say, well, you know, what about a PC company that became a music distributor? Did they have the right to play there? And the answer is yes, when they make a product that good. And that's what's kind of so incredible at Apple. They've grown this revenue by getting jobs done better and better with new technologies as they come up. And what's, I think, is sort of a fun little tidbit about Jay is that he saw this coming back in 2014, that Apple would get even far bigger than it already was already worth $450 billion. And Jay wrote this post predicting that Apple would be worth $3 trillion and that it's at $2 trillion today, it's still undervalued. And he used Warren Buffett's own intrinsic value model plus jobs to be done even before Buffett made that investment. So, Jay, can you tell us a little bit about that? Like, how did you figure that out? What was the analysis?
Yeah, it's a great question, and I don't want to present myself as some sort of genius, but it wasn't hard to do. So the way Buffett's intrinsic value model works, which works for any company, is that you're essentially saying any company, the value of that company is the discounted value of the future cash that it can generate. So if you're a profitable company and you're growing, those two things are related. How much are you generating in cash flow that's available to the owners of shares? Buffett calls that owner's earnings. And then what's the likely growth rate? And you have to, you know, plug some numbers into a spreadsheet and look historically what Apple had done. And basically my analysis said, look, Apple has an extraordinary track record of growing over a long time period. And is that growth going to continue? Now, it's probably not going to continue at that same rate. So I took a lower rate and said, well, even at this lower rate of growth, Apple is still worth $3 trillion. And so I don't make stock recommendations, but if you were to do that analysis today, it still holds that Apple is actually still undervalued today. And that's what I think is extraordinary, is how big the markets are that Apple is playing in. Because basically every human on the planet is trying to connect with other humans, and they're essentially now... I mean, saying they're a computer company isn't correct either. It's really a communications company, because we're using all these devices to get jobs done, which include also communicating with other humans. So the analysis wasn't that hard to do. But what actually is interesting, and this is where jobs to be done really comes into play, is that I've always thought that Apple did an incredible job at getting jobs done. And it's funny, this goes back to... literally the 1970s, my father bought our family a Apple II Plus. It was super powered. It had two disk drives and 64K. So those were the days. But the thing that was really, and he was using it for work stuff because there was a thing called VisiCalc, which was a spreadsheet, which was kind of a killer app at the time. He was an entrepreneur, so he wanted to run stuff on the spreadsheet. But of course, I used it to learn how to program so I could make video games. But what's interesting is then he, very shortly after that in the 80s, because he was a business person, bought an IBM compatible. You remember like Compaq was one of the brands, and they were known as IBM compatible computers because this small company called Microsoft had licensed their PC operating system to IBM, and they licensed it to other people, so you could make a computer that was IBM compatible. And back then, you know, then Apple came out with the Macintosh, and it, you know, opened up with a smiley face. And so immediately,
that,
you know,
was our family's first computer.
Yeah. My dad thought it was a toy. So he was like, oh, that's just not a serious, you know, work machine. I need a green screen where I'm entering code to like look at my files. And I could never explain. I always just was drawn to the Mac. And I started doing music on the Mac, and the Mac was great for music, and of course the creative arts, and I wrote all my college papers on it. And I couldn't explain why it was better. I had no reference. Really, not many people could. But this is where Jobs to Be Done comes to play. It was clearly helping me get different jobs done faster and more accurately. And that's the core of all innovation. If you look at Apple's success from day one until today, it's getting jobs done faster and more accurately. And so what I was doing in 2014 is looking at Apple and saying, okay, if you apply Jobs to Be Done theory and you imply and you just did the math on Buffett's intrinsic value model, you have a pretty reasonable expectation that Apple is going to continue to grow, because growth comes from getting the jobs done better. And Jared, as you mentioned, there's no company better at reinventing itself. And Apple, you know, its name used to be Apple Computer, and they actually got rid of the name because they realized we're not a computer company. We're doing all these things. Now they're doing some things that I think are straying away. They're making like television shows with Jennifer Aniston. So whether or not they should do that, that's an interesting question.
Ted Lasso is terrific, though, if you haven't seen it.
Yeah, it is nice that you have TV shows and violent. I think most TV shows are just incredibly violent today. But so that's a whole other discussion as well. But if you look, so back in 2014, that's when I really, because I, you know, we'd been doing JavaScript on for work for a while. If you applied it to Apple, it made a lot of sense. It explained everything, not just like why there's a smiley face, but why the products were really successful. And in fact, in 2015, in Fortune, which we should link to for people, Fortune wrote about Phil Schiller, you know, who's been a executive at Apple for decades. He's, you know, definitely one of the number two, three people in the company. His grand unified theory of Apple is actually based on Jobs to be Done thinking. And that's what was really fascinating is you could see this from an outsider if you knew, you know, Jobs to be Done theory, but to have Phil himself say it was pretty amazing. And he got it almost right, which I also think is really interesting. He said, you know, we ask, what's the job of the watch? What is the job of the phone? It is to do what? You know, what is the job of the iPad? What's the job of the notebook? And then all the way up to what's the job of a, you know, super powerful Macintosh? And so they have this type of thinking at Apple, I think more than any other company in the world. And I think that explains a lot of their success.
Yeah. And one of the things that's interesting about, the article in Fortune where Phil Schiller lays out these jobs, he says, I think he says, the job of the iPad is to do as much as you possibly can before you need a laptop. And the laptop is to, the job of the laptop is to do, you know, everything you can't do with an iPad, and then everything you can possibly think of after that until you need a Mac, which is the most powerful computer you can find. And the job is all based on other products, which I think is interesting because we typically say that, you know, a good job to be done to target is product agnostic, right? It doesn't include products and technologies because then your job remains stable over time. And if the job of the iPhone is to do things that the iPad can't, well, that's inherently not stable because the iPad's functionality is going to change over time, what it can do, or vice versa, right? The iPad can do things that the iPhone can. The iPhone's going to change. Maybe someday there won't be an iPad. You know, all these things are changeable. So it seems like not great job definitions. But then when you think about if you worked internally at Apple and you were working on something like the MacBook or the iPhone, how would you define it in terms of one job? And the reason I ask this question is because through the App Store, you can get pretty much any job done. A developer can create an app to do almost anything with an iPhone. So it's hard to say, like, this is the one job that we focus on. There are many job domains, and because of the extensibility of the App Store, it's kind of like a job getting done machine. So how would you approach that? How would you even begin to talk about that internally if you worked at Apple?
Yeah, I think there's two great things to talk about there. It's how would Apple think about it internally? And then second, how would you think about it as a competitor to Apple and right. You wanted to beat Apple? So the two super important questions. And I think internally, you have to break it down. So if you're on the OS level, and by the way, Apple made this mistake. Remember before Steve Jobs came back, they almost went out of business. They famously, I think they had like 60 or 90 days of cash when Steve Jobs came back. And, you know, they could have easily gone out of business. And that's because they didn't fully embrace, I think they recognized it, but they didn't fully embrace that a computer or a tiny computer in your pocket called a phone for some reason is actually a platform to get multiple jobs done. So if you're on the OS team at Apple, obviously what you have to do is think about how are you going to enable other companies to use your platform to help get jobs done? Are those health jobs? Are they education jobs? Are they finance jobs? Are they, you know, entertainment jobs, creative jobs, you know, whatever they are? And this is kind of Mark Andreessen's, you know, point about software eating the world. You know, what does that mean? That just seems like some crazy, you know, venture capitalist catchphrase. But the way that we see it and explain it is the reason software is so incredibly important in our lives is when you're trying to achieve any goal, whether it's a health goal, you know, finance goal, professional goal, career goal, you know, whatever, all jobs are just goals you're trying to achieve independent of the products, that all of those jobs require information. And you have to gather that information, you have to analyze the information, you have to make sure it's accurate, then you have to make decisions with that information, and then you have to make these assessments about whether it's going well, you have to make revisions, and all software does that incredibly well because there's so much information-based jobs. Even something like exercising, which is very physical, still has a huge information component. Like, what do you want to do to optimize your health through exercise? You need to know right. an incredible amount of information to get that job done better. And, you know, I like exercising, but I like exercising, you know, in what Tim Ferriss calls the minimum effective dose, right? So I'm not mm-hmm. looking to exercise 5 hours a day. I'm looking to exercise 7 minutes a day if that's going to get me to the optimal position. Right. So that even though in those types of jobs, there's information. So
yeah, and even it's interesting to think about how software can turn jobs that required physical actions into now what are decisions. So if you think about, you know, shopping for groceries, you used to have to go to the store and actually pick the groceries up, put them in your cart, take them in your car and bring them home. And now you can just make decisions and click because software can get the groceries delivered to you. And that happens over and over again as jobs go from analog to software.
Oh, even better. I love this grocery, you know, shopping, cooking. You know, we have four daughters, so we've got 6 mouths to feed every night. Eliminate the grocery shopping. I know one option is Instacart, but I've literally signed up for every, you know, food delivery service, whether it was, you know, Blue Apron, where you still have to make the whole meal, Gobble, which is a version that their tagline was great. It was like 10 minutes, one pan. And then, and I've even microwaved food, but that doesn't taste good. It's not healthy, obviously. But then there was Brava, this new oven that like uses light to cook, which has been really great. But I thought Brava was going to just send you meals. You put into the oven and it's done. So there's this other company that I just discovered called Tavola. And it is an oven, but it's also a meal delivery service. So you just put the meal in and it's a steam oven. So yeah, even that is a case where the innovation can get rid of the product, which is a grocery store is the solution. Right. And if even you can get rid of the grocery store, you know, even better. So, this is of course the way innovation always happens. But I think, Jared, to your point about then what do you do internal to Apple if you're not on the OS team, you know?
Yeah.
And that's where you do have to think about what the customer's job is, whatever the app is. And let me give you a good example where I think Apple's done a terrible job is their recent exercise competitor. Basically, it's a Peloton and a lot of other apps. You know, it's essentially they have, you know, an exercise coach who sits there, and it's a more beautiful studio because Apple does things that are beautiful, which is nice, fine. But it's not any different. It really is not different than literally hundreds of apps that are out there, including Peloton,
right,
which you can use without the Peloton. It's like, hey, let's do jumping jacks for 10 minutes, or we're going to do core work, or we're going to do whatever. It doesn't track any of that. It doesn't say, Jay, you're trying to lose 15 pounds, or Jay, you're trying to prevent heart disease, or Jay, you need to, you know, reduce your risk for diabetes, and here's all the metrics, and this is just designed exactly for you, Jay, and you only need to do it the minimum amount every day with, you know, not too much expense. It's just a copycat, and that's really unfortunate to see from Apple for a couple reasons. One, It's not innovative at all. It doesn't get the job done mm-hmm. better at all. You look at Peloton versus Apple's exercise, not different in any way. Now they innovated on the watch and the little rings, and that seems to encourage people, which is great. But the actual exercises themselves, nothing different there. Really disappointing. Right. And the other thing is they should not be allowed to be in that market. And here's the argument. This is where like Apple's kind of at the status of a nation. They're using their platform to then basically get people to use Apple's app instead of there's literally probably thousands of trainers who've created their own apps of, you know, even Peloton, which has become a big company, is smaller than Apple. And we're diminishing the competition in that market. And especially when it's just not innovative, which it's not, I would argue, from what Apple's doing, they will take share. They will put people, small businesses, smaller businesses out of business just because they have the platform and they own it. And, you know, that's a whole other discussion.
About and they have the users close at hand.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah. And I think what's related to what you're talking about and a little bit aside of the monopoly discussion is that's interesting. Is it sounds like when you're talking about the OS level and the hardware itself, Apple's extremely good at that and does get the jobs done much better. They enable developers to build things on that platform that are much better than what can be built on other platforms. And in one way, it's almost like the customer they're focused on is the developer, and the job then can be is actually much easier to think about.
Yep.
Because you're thinking about what's the goal of the developer and what are their needs, as opposed to all the consumers who are trying to get a million things done. And what's interesting about the move from hardware sales to services is that the service is direct to consumer. You're not building it for a developer. You're not enabling a developer in that case, right? You're building something that's supposed to be great on its own. And Apple Music is a great example where they entered that business and they're getting growth, it seems, because it's the default application in the iPhone. So the 900 million people that use that and don't think to go download Spotify use Apple Music, and it's growing sort of at a fairly tepid rate given the potential. But Spotify is much better. It's getting the job done much better. And it was way ahead of Apple Music until Apple Music launched. And I haven't looked at the numbers recently, but you could see a pattern here where maybe Apple is not as good at figuring out consumers' jobs and their unmet needs and generating software and services that get those done better than other products could. So one way to beat Apple is to tightly focus, right? Instead of trying to build hardware that to beat them, you focus on a small number of jobs. And what's interesting here is that if you remember when the iPhone launched in 2007, it didn't have an app store. It didn't try to get a million jobs done well. It tried to get three. You know, you could argue is a little more because internet communications enables a lot of jobs, but the way Steve Jobs presented it was three jobs. It was phone communication, internet communication, and music. And that's it. And then they expanded on that platform. So when you think about beating a giant competitor, which they did have big, like Nokia was selling a lot of phones at the time.
Yep.
And BlackBerry was too, and just got totally destroyed by the iPhone, who was tightly focused on doing things differently in those tight jobs. So when you think about beating Apple now, it might not be build a better phone. It might be pick jobs smartly that Apple's not doing all that well on, and think about how can you generate a platform out of getting that job done much better that you can expand to other jobs.
Yeah, I think that's right. And you pointed out something that I think is really important as well, is you're not going to beat Apple going head to head with a phone. It's just, it never, competition and changes in markets never work like that. Even the iPhone versus the BlackBerry, the iPhone has a phone in its name, but it's not a phone, right? And it's not a text entry device. The whole reason.
And it was actually worse at being a phone,
yeah,
right?
Like that's
the
right.
The reception was pretty bad for a while.
Yeah, no. And typing was worse, right? So if you viewed what the thing was a mobile typing device, you know, it was definitely worse. But And so I think that's right. But the other is, if you're going to compete with Apple, you shouldn't even think of yourself as an app developer. That's another problem. So the problem is, of course, there have been startups that have been acquired for $1 billion with no revenue, like Instagram, right? It got sold. It only had an iPhone app. So it just looks like, hey, if you're a startup or if you're a competitor, let's just launch an app and we'll get really successful by having an app. But that's not the way you should think about it, because I guarantee you one thing. I will make this prediction. I might be dead by the time it comes true, but there will come a day when we're not using our phones. Absolutely, we're not going to stare at these little devices at the rate we do now. I will also predict if that's true, if that ever ends, humanity will come to an end and it'll be the end of civilization. So,
I actually think that feature is not all that far off. I'm aware of technologists at really important companies that are working on that problem every day. How do we get people to stare at phones less?
Yeah. No, it absolutely will happen, because that's no one's goal. No one's goal is to stare at their phone all day. It's to connect their family and friends and have meaningful, creative lives. So what I will say is, so if you're trying to beat Apple, let's take health, for example. To think of yourself as an app developer for health is the wrong way to think about it, because one, health, if you're just thinking about exercise, we're trying to get people to optimize their health through exercise. There's so much complexity in there. Now an app might be part of the solution, and it certainly is going to be part of the solution in the short term, but there's so much else that goes on to a job of that level of complexity. And most jobs have that level of complexity. So if you're trying to think, oh gosh, how do we respond to the fact that Apple now has these studios where they have, nice trainers jumping around telling you to, do squats and jumping jacks, like, that is just not the way to compete. The way to compete is to first figure out where's the underserved segment. And this, to build a product strategy, you want to figure out who's that underserved segment, and then really what does it take to serve those people. And that is where Jobs to Be Done is so powerful and enables you to differentiate. And you can tell Apple's not using Jobs to Be Done in their exercise app. That I would not consider that. I mean, it could be successful because they own the platform, and you're right. Out of 900 million customers, if 100 million of them use it, it's a huge success, right?
Right.
So that is the approach to beating Apple. Like, it just going head to head with, like, we're going to create a new phone would just, fail miserably.
It's interesting, because the platform owners, as you describe the iPhone and the Apple ecosystem as a platform, there's kind of like easy money for them, right? The first, 10% of their users adopting anything, when they have that many users, they're going to make money on it, and it's probably going to be profitable. And so when you are trying to compete with that, you have to go for the hard money in a way, right? You're not going to get the easy money, or the dumb money, you might call it, as readily, because you don't own the audience. So you really, that's where the 10x better comes in, because you have to not only build something that gets the job done, but it has to be so much better than what's already in the existing platform that your customer is potentially using, that they're willing to switch from that platform to use your thing. Which is why I think people use the App Store as a channel to get customers, because the users are already there. But I think if the analogy to what you were saying, Jay, about you can't think of yourself as an app developer. Imagine if Steve Jobs thought of himself as a PC maker before he created the iPod. He never would have created it, and music would have been hard to listen to on a go. We might still be using Walkmans, who knows, or like MP3 players that weren't all that great. And Microsoft never would have developed the Zune, so they might have saved some money. But but the point is, you have to think about yourself as, like, how am I going to get this job done, and what technologies are available to me to make that happen? And that's where you might find an opportunity to generate a new platform that gets one job done much, much better than it can get done today with the existing solutions in the market, and then could provide the springboard, right? Literally the platform to do other jobs with that new technology. And Steve Jobs, with the iPhone, interestingly, put together a bunch of new technologies, including just the glass, right? Going to Corning and getting Gorilla Glass, right? Is that what it's called? Gorilla Glass, I think?
Yeah.
It was super hard glass that wouldn't break. And he had Corning develop it with him. He put a lot of new technologies together, and he famously did that with the GUI in the original Mac too, right? Like, he didn't invent the mouse and the graphical user interface. He adopted it from somewhere else. And that ability to find those technologies and figure out how to put them together to get the job done rather than be a product maker is really magical. And that's where you can find opportunities to beat a company like Apple, I think.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I want to say, you know, I do love Apple. I've been an Apple customer since 1979. Kind of like when we talked about Tesla, you invested in Tesla stock, and I bought a Tesla, and I should have invested in Apple stock rather than buying their products. but I bought a lot of Apple products, and you know, we're an entire Apple family. Like, all four of my children, you know, are on Apple devices, especially now they're in virtual school during COVID. You know, my wife and I, it's all Apple all the time. But I will say, there's a lot of, I have disappointment in a lot of what Apple's doing recently, because, you know, the exercise app is just like a, you know, tiny example, but even their movement into media, like, sure, they're probably going to make money on, you know, TV shows, whether it's, you know, Jennifer Aniston and Ted Lasso or whatever. Like, but is that really the dent in the universe that we're looking for, given what the world is going through, given that almost half the people in the United States don't have $400 to their name?
Right.
And they are the size of a nation. So does that, part of the U.S. represent no market opportunity? They can't figure out a way to make those people's lives better in any way? They're not even trying, from what I can see, which is very sad, because mm-hmm. I think those problems are going to get worse. That's a whole other, you know, conversation. But I also do think that's where someone can beat Apple, is looking at these really underserved markets with people that really do have real problems in their lives. I mean, hey, look, I love the new AirPod feature that automatically switches device, but what I see Apple doing recently is, I would call them technical convenience features. Like, if you're already a user, that is nice. But does that change my life? And does that make our society and the world a better place? I mean, really? I don't think so. And that's what I find disappointing, is they're not looking at the world and looking at all these jobs that there are huge growth opportunities for. It's literally like half the United States, right? And if they can't figure out, if companies can't figure out how to help transform our country and create the world and create a better future, then we are really in trouble. I mean, and there's a role for government to play as well. But this is why, you know, we focus on innovation with companies, is because we have to innovate. We have to create new ways of getting jobs done that is really meaningful in people's lives. Now, having said all that, and I tell my friends that Apple and I are kind of having marital problems, but the things that I think they are doing really, really well at is, I mean, in summary, it's their battle with Facebook. I think this is incredibly important to our society, that privacy completely changes, that people own their own data, that you don't have companies like Facebook and, you know, as Google as well, and YouTube, and, you know, social networks who use divisive algorithms to generate more views, to sell ads, to, you know, we've talked about this before. But that I do... And I hope that it's sincere in the company, that it's a vision that they have, that like there is a better world because we need, you know, if people have more protection against this type of stuff, it's a better world, rather than just saying like, oh yeah, we're Apple, we don't sell ads, so we just, you know.
Right. Yeah, do you remember, there was iAd at one point. Do you know if that still exists or that could shut down?
I don't think it does, but I do think, I don't know. We'd have to investigate that. But I do know that you can advertise in the App Store.
Right.
Which, isn't necessarily a bad thing. I mean, and you and I have talked about this, you know, on other podcasts, but ads aren't necessarily bad. If you're looking to get a job done,
suggestions of things that could solve your problem.
That's right. If, you know, your child has
nobody looks at it that way.
Some health problem, you want to know what's out there, right? You want an ad saying, yes, I can solve your child's health problem or your own.
Yes.
So yeah, so ads aren't necessarily bad. That's a whole other conversation, but I do think their stance on privacy is fantastic. And I hope.
The only reason I thought about it was because their business model of, we try to create something so good that you're willing to pay for it rather than we're going to give it away for free, enables them to have stances like this where they can, hold security and confidentiality and own your own data as a key value and actually follow through with it because they don't need that to make more money. And I think that that's really important to think about, right? What is your business model and what will that incentivize you to do? You know, people will talk sometimes about, it's good to have free products because it creates more access to technology. And I got to say, there's a double-edged sword, right? If something's, you know, I once, there's a well-known jazz musician who's a friend who once said to me, he was asked by his school to play a concert for free. And he said, you know, growing up in New Orleans and gigging, the one thing I learned is if that I'm playing music, somebody's getting paid.
Yeah.
And it better be me.
Yeah.
And I think about the same thing if when you're using a product. Like if somebody built some technology for you to use, somebody's getting paid. And you better know who it is because you may not be a customer. You might be a product. And I think we need to think really hard about that, right? When people say, "Oh, we want to provide access," okay, well, does your business model enable you to provide access in a way that's not actually hurting your user, right? And when your customer is somebody entirely different, and Apple's on the right side of that, given their business model, and it gives them freedoms to do things that other companies can't. Now, it also puts them in position of being a premium product in a lot of ways. So I think it's an interesting question, Jay. What can they do to move out of premium segments and still be profitable and get jobs done really effectively without turning the customer into a product?
Yeah, and I think that's a great question. And we can talk about that in another podcast. In short, it is looking for those opportunities where customers are struggling to get a job done and you can figure out solutions at a price they are willing to pay, or you can create a model that is subsidizing those users into the system that doesn't necessarily have to be advertising. It can be information-based.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, you can also contribute your data voluntarily in exchange for value that isn't gonna generate, you know, divisive and hateful algorithms. So there's lots of ways to approach that. That I think is a much longer discussion. I think in short, if how would you beat Apple is a great question and a great thing to think about. I'd first by saying I still think Apple's undervalued. Not that I make stock recommendations to anybody, but I think the $3 trillion number holds. That I was calculated in 2014. I should go back and redo that spreadsheet because it's probably even bigger now. But I think the way to beat them first is not to think of you're competing on the phone level. I mean, we've already got these two huge platforms, you know, Android and iOS, and to not think about it even as an app developer, like you're going to compete right there with them with specific apps. You have to look at the customer's job and build a product strategy that likely entails an app, not on a phone alone, but also probably on the web on a, you know, PC. But also on whatever devices emerge, and maybe it includes hardware and services. Like, don't limit yourself to thinking your product strategy has to be some app on a phone or some hardware device alone. And I think you see that. You can even see that in health, right? Peloton is Peloton software or hardware, right? Well, it's both, and services too, right? So. Mm-hmm. When you think outside of the box, to use the cliche, but literally outside of the software and outside of the hardware, you think like your customers and empathize with them.
And one last quick thought on who the customer is. You could also take a lesson from Apple, right? They didn't, with the iPhone, they didn't go straight for the business customer where BlackBerry had their stronghold at first. They started with consumers who would be more interested in listening to music and, you know, general communication jobs and not business jobs. And then over time, they overtook them. And so that's another way to think about how to compete with Apple. Is there a niche of a customer who's looking to get a more specific job done that you can help with that isn't going directly after the people who love Apple the most?
Yeah, and we don't talk about that enough, but I think that's a great thing to close on is that, and we see this a lot with companies can't even define who their customer is. And the reason I think it's so important and your point about, you know, who is an Apple customer, that's actually interesting, is there are literally hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of different types of customers, whether they're parents and they're pre-parenting or they're empty nesters or retirees or whatever, whether you're cardiovascular surgeons or, you know, a VP of finance or operations. They're just literally hundreds of different customers. And we always refer to them as the job beneficiaries because they're the person, the actual humans from who benefits from getting the job done. And Apple famously did this. You're exactly right. They targeted the job beneficiary. And there's famous stories about this. Of course, the most famous is, I think, Steve Jobs called IT managers orifices, something like that. There's something, he had some really interesting name. I should look that up. But he did. He was like, I'm not targeting those people. Now, I think he just had like a visceral reaction. But Jobs' theory explains like why that was a smart thing to do, because those are just job executors, meaning they're just people who are helping someone who benefits from getting the job done get the job done. And so what that means is that over time, in every single market, there will be a solution where the job beneficiary, whether it's a patient, a consumer, a business person, will be able to get the job done for themselves. And of course, in business markets, this is what a SaaS application is. You no longer need an IT department because you can just log in to your CRM or your ERP system, and it works in a, you know, shared services environment. So that happens in every market. Apple was very, very good at that. And that's true if you're going to beat Apple. Definitely think about it this way. Think about it from the job beneficiary, not the job executor, and then innovate for that job beneficiary. Yeah, I think that's an incredibly important discussion.
Thanks for listening to our How Would You Beat podcast. Visit us at thrive.com. That's THRV.com to get our free how-to guides and try our Jobs to Be Done software for free.